welcome, and not just to our breakout, but also to Mockingbird in general. It's a pleasure to have you here in New York. My name is Brian Jarrell, and I am Mockingbird's social media guy. So if any of you follow us on Twitter or Facebook, I'm the person kind of running that behind the scenes. I'm in Morgantown, West Virginia right now, and I work at West Virginia University. Let's go Mountaineers. And I'm also an assistant pastor at a church up the road in Washington, Pennsylvania. I've been part of Mockingbird. This is my fourth conference, actually. I've been trying to make it regularly since about 2010, and I love it, and I hope you guys are having a good time, too. And so on behalf of Mockingbird and everyone else here, welcome.
I'm Elena, and I've been to every conference, Mockingbird. We've been here in New York for the last 10 years, and that's right about when Mockingbird got cooking. So, and currently I'm on the board of Mockingbird, and I'm the director of the children's programs here at the church, at Calvary St. George's Church.
I've heard this is true, do you actually call it the Mocking Board? Like, or is that just me, like, making that up
do
in my head?
Do we call it that, Drew? The Mocking Board.
The Mocking Board.
Yeah. No, we don't. But, so we just wanted to have this session just to let you know a little bit more about the organization, like, how did it come to be, and what is the gospel message that we proclaim through Mockingbird, and why is it important to us and our ministries and our everyday lives? So I'll just give you a little bit of history with my experience with Mockingbird and this message of radical grace. So when my husband and I were in Pittsburgh, probably now 15 years ago, when he was going through seminary, we first took classes with Paul Zoll, and this was the first time we'd really heard this radical message of grace. And at the time, I was a behavior therapist working with the dual diagnosed, and my job was to help reorient and instigate behavior change, behavior modification. And so I was taking classes and learning about this radical grace, and at the same time, I'm sort of working with people to change their behavior. And so these two ideas came heavily into contact, and I had to sort of deal with the reality of how much control we have as people and over our relationships and the people we encounter, and what does that mean when it comes into contact with God's grace. And so that's sort of the place that I came from. And so when Dave moved to New York about 10 years ago, and Jake and I first started here at the church, and you're beginning to imagine what your ministry is going to look like, what your life is going to look like, we decided we needed a new kind of ministry that came into contact with the realities of the everyday life, something that made sense. And we wanted to target folks who felt like they were burned out by the church, that they never felt like they got it together, that Christianity really didn't work for them in the end, and they really tried hard. And so that's sort of the place that I came from, and we all came from when we began to dream up what Mockingbird would be or is. And our main focus we knew had to be this radical message of grace that we all sort of felt like we inherited and have been saved by and continue to be saved by, and wanted to communicate not only just to burned out Christians, but people in the church. And that also we began to realize that the law doesn't just apply to Christians, but it applies to the whole world. And so we see it in parenting, we see it on blogs, we see it all over the place. And at the time in 2006, like having a blog on Blogspot, I mean, that was like real fresh. So I feel like we were explorers in this new territory, but all at the same time trying to communicate that the law affected each and every one of us, and it sort of poured into our relationships and our everyday life. And so Brian is going to talk a little bit more about what is this gospel, what is this radical gospel we're talking about, and why has Mockingbird held so tightly to it?
Yeah. Mockingbird in a sentence is this. Our hope is to connect the gospel to the realities of everyday life. And that's sort of our tagline. It's our vision or mission, all that sort of stuff that you hear in corporate speak. But it's also our passion as Christians, too, that this gospel message that has been part of our world since Jesus' death and resurrection, it changes people and it changes things in a way that nothing else can. And so making sure we have this gospel message, this radical one-way love of God to sinners, and keeping it pure, and making sure it's unadulterated, we didn't water it down. That's something that I think we could say that the church has kind of lost over perhaps the past couple, I won't put a time on it. In the past, it gets lost from time to time, and then it gets rediscovered from time to time. And people's hearts, to quote the Wesleys, are strangely warmed anew. So what is the gospel that we talk about? It is the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, his coming back to fix the world, to get everything straight. The Bible uses language like justification, which we talked about this morning, this idea that God has, because of Jesus' death and resurrection, that he's declared us righteous. And so in the great courtroom of life, we don't have to give a defense because the trial's already over. And we've been found not guilty in God's sight. We talk about redemption, this idea that we've been bought out of slavery, that there are, as much as we like to think that we're in control of the world, that we're actually slaves to ourselves, to our inner passions, to the things that we don't like about ourselves, and that we're slaves also to the way the world around us would have us operate, and that the gospel frees us from that. We have, in a sense, a new master who takes the shackles off our feet, that sort of thing. And then we also talk about the atonement, that there's this relationship imbalance that we have with God, that our relationship's not okay, and that the death and resurrection of Jesus restores that balance, that it was a sacrifice that restored that relationship. And when you look at those different ways the Bible talks about Jesus' death and resurrection, you get this portrait painted of a God who does everything, and the only thing we really contribute is sin and resistance. That we're not the main players in this, but we're recipients of a gift. And so it's a picture of a God who loves us, who says, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it." And then he takes care of it through Jesus' death and resurrection. And so to help us guard that message, we've sort of taken under our wing three different, you might call them, themes in Mockingbird. These are things that we come back to time and time again. So while the gospel is something that Christians have used for some time, these themes are a little more specific to perhaps Mockingbird or some specific traditions in the church. And the first one would be low anthropology, or the bondage of the will. And Luther used that term, bondage of the will, to suggest that human beings are incapable of making the right decisions for the right reasons. And so from time to time, we may get the reason right, but the decision wrong. Or we may get the decision right and the reason. We get it messed up. And so there's a real sense in which whenever we talk about everyday life, we need to talk about that particular thing. And when Jesus comes along and says, well, it's not just that you don't murder your neighbor, you can't hate them either. Mm-hmm. It opens this whole new spectrum from understanding how we as human beings relate to God, who doesn't have to deal with this. Like, he does the right thing for the right reason, and we don't. And so when you get into this motivation element as well, no, there is, to quote Romans, none righteous, no, not one. And that really sounds like Debbie Downer from SNL, right? It's you know, wah, wah, you zoom in on the face. And it puts us at odds with a lot of the messaging in the world today. You know, this is why Mockingbird will never get a TED talk, right? Because the TED universe, if you're familiar, these sort of online secular sermons are so rooted in this idea that human beings, if they just make the right choices for the right reasons, the world will be a better place. And that's just sort of a foundational starting block that Mockingbird doesn't have. Ethan did a great job this morning of talking about it. And, you know, we talk about sin a lot, but we also talk about it without using that word. And so being able to articulate this bondage of the will, this inability for us to do the right thing because we're so afraid of how that would blow back on us, that's something that Mockingbird really hammers home. And it helps us to be disillusioned with the false gospels of the world, but it also helps us to be disillusioned with the false gospels we preach to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of the first Mockingbird note. The second one would be our differentiation between the law and the gospel. And this is something, you read it in the Bible. Paul does this in his epistles. John has it too in his gospel, that Moses brought the law, but Jesus brings something new to the table. And it's the idea that the Bible is full of laws, and human beings really like those laws. Whether it's the Ten Commandments or whether it's the Sermon on the Mount, that the Bible is full of laws. And something about laws, we get tunnel vision, and we focus on these laws and we create ethical systems out of them. And what the differentiation between law and gospel helps us to do is it helps us to see that the law in and of itself is good and it's great, but if we are only going to try to obey it, then we've missed the point. That we can have the law as an ethical system, but if we do that, we've missed the reason why God has given us the law. And so the law is not this sort of holistic ethical system that we can follow, because we can't follow it because we can't make the right decisions for the right reasons. But it's instead a trail of breadcrumbs that leads us to Jesus. And so when we focus on the law, it's like finding a trail of breadcrumbs in the woods and thinking, oh boy, a snack. And you just sort of sit there on the ground. You're like, oh, this is great. I've got some breadcrumbs. And we miss the point that they lead us to see, oh, well, we can't make the right decisions for the right reasons. And so we've got this imbalance with God and we need someone to fix it. And Jesus does that. And so the law is a trail of breadcrumbs that leads to Jesus. And so when we hear Christianity, people say things like, Christianity is about doing good. It's about loving your neighbor. It's about trying hard. That's a Christianity that's focused on the law. When we have a Christianity that's, you know, if you just do these five things that will help your financial state or your marriage, and they always start with the letter C. I don't know why. It's always the five things that start with the letter C will help you become a more successful person. Those things normally just, they don't work, but they miss the point that those principles and rules that God have given us help us to get from one place to another, and we're not meant to stay with just the law. So that's the second Mockingbird thing we talk about. And the third would be the difference between the theology of glory and a theology of the cross. And all three of these are sort of gifts that Martin Luther gave us after he encountered the scripture. And so we really like Martin Luther around here. The theology of the glory and theology of the cross have to do with the idea of suffering. And what role does suffering play in the Christian life? So if suffering is a total non-good, if nothing good can ever come from suffering, if suffering is this great cosmic blip that God is just going to erase and get rid of because it shouldn't be happening, that's what we call a theology of glory. And the idea is that if God is working from a theology of glory, we're going to get better all the time, that life is going to get better all the time, we're going to be climbing Jacob's ladder, so to speak, and that our obedience in our Christian life will then alleviate our suffering. And that will, and it's not just sort of this Creflo Dollar private jet prosperity gospel either. This is that same sort of, well, if you're obeying it right and if you're doing this right, then there won't be as much suffering in your life. But what we find in the Bible and what we find in the life of Jesus is a theology of the cross, where God's suffering, where Jesus is suffering actually is something that God redeems, and that God's not averse to using our pain and our dark places to get his work done. In fact, the Christian life is not necessarily this great uphill climb to glory, but it's actually a descent as you recognize more and more your own unworthiness and your own inability to do the right thing for the right reason. And so those are the three things, three Mockingbird themes that we try to hit on. They help us preserve the purity of the gospel. They keep us from being too up and happy about ourselves, as opposed to being more in tune with the message that we've received from the past. And so that's why the reason we want to keep this gospel pure, is because, it's the only thing that works. It doesn't always work. You can preach the gospel and it falls on deaf ears, but when it clicks, you're cooking with gas, bam, to quote Emeril. There's something really beautiful that happens, when you see the coin drop from the head to the heart and people realize, well, God actually isn't just about my successes, but God is about my failures too. God is dancing with us, like Sarah Condon's talk last night, and that he's with us in our place of great failure as much as he is in our success.
I would say, yeah, too, part of it is that we receive relief in having the opportunity to be honest with ourselves. So relief comes, I think, from being able to face ourselves and to know that it's safe to deal with our reality. And also, I think it leads to a life that is less compartmentalized. I think often when we're trying to keep our act together or preserve our identities, we often lead to a life that's not honest, and we compartmentalize things. So one part of our lives has a higher value than other parts. And I think the third thing, too, is Mockingbird is also interested in people having real healthy relationships with ourselves and with other people. And I think when you're someone who knows you've been forgiven much, you're therefore enabled to have empathy and compassion with those around you. And you can say, I'm sorry. And there can be forgiveness and reconciliation between parents, children, friends, mothers, daughters. And so those at times are the fruits of the gospel, and we are so grateful for them.
Yeah. It's in the book Law and Gospel that Mockingbird published, they call it objective relief or objective comfort, that it takes my relationship with God off the table as something that I have to worry about keeping up or dealing with on my day-to-day basis. And so when I mess up in my marriage, or when I mess up at work, or when I mess up, I can actually focus not just on sort of making some obscure penance with God or having some sort of great, relational fallout with the divine, but instead I can actually think about making reconciliation with my neighbor, because I don't have to worry about some sort of divine hammer dropping. And so ironically, when we have the law as its system, and I'm trying to sort of run the treadmill of obeying and keeping the law going, it focuses me and myself and my relationship with God. But once that's been taken care of, I have this comfort, and I have a cornerstone so that I can start relating to other people and not worrying about myself. It's when you fly, right? What do they say? Put the oxygen mask on yourself and then help somebody else. And so someone's already got my oxygen mask on, and I can worry about helping other people with theirs, so to speak. So what Mockingbird is all about, reality and connecting it to reality, like all this stuff. Like, it seems so heady right now. But once it sinks in, it changes things. And when we talk about reality, we're talking about pop culture, like high culture, low culture, everything from New Yorker cartoons and journals of psychology to the latest Netflix release. We have yet to get a post on Fuller House on the blog, but we have Daredevil, so that's okay, right? We all in between. Like, this is where we live. We live online. We live in our social media world. We live in the day-to-day as parents, as sons and daughters, as grandparents, perhaps. We live in all of these different worlds, and the gospel actually has a word of objective comfort and relief in those places. And so when we write and when we blog and when we post, we're really concerned with making sure that this isn't just some sort of abstraction that you hear about on Sundays and then you just go home, that it's something that you can keep with you and put it in your pocket. And whenever things go wrong, you have a foundation to fall back on. So yeah, did you want to share anything else? I think that kind of gives you a synopsis of who we are and what we do and the passion that drives us.
Yeah, I mean, does anybody have any questions about what we do? We sort of talk about everything. We talk about parenting. We talk about, I mean, anything that's out there we're talking about.
There's a session
engaging
on time travel, like in science fiction. Like even, like we'll go there too, you know, obscure Russian authors, you know, the pressures of college application life. I mean, there's not a single inch of, to paraphrase Abraham Kuyper, there's not a single inch of the universe which God does not say the gospel doesn't work there.
Just any questions or thoughts or anything?
No. Well, I'll tell a little bit about how I came to Mockingbird too.
Sure.
I came to the Christian world through a pretty dysfunctional relationship I had in high school, crazy enough. So I will let you in on a little secret. If you got the magazine that came in, there's a section that we do called the confessional. And in the confessional, we have different members of the Mockingbird community or different contributors. They'll write a confession, and it's normally anonymous. But that's my confessional in the magazine. I'm the guy. I was the youth group kid, like, out, like, running out into the woods with the girls on youth trips. Like, that was me. After a pregnancy scare in high school, that's when I realized, oh, like this forgiveness stuff, it's for me. Like it really is. And so, in high school, I went through a pregnancy scare with a girlfriend, and that's when I'm like, oh, like I need this Christian thing. And I'm really thankful for the Southern Baptist community that I was a part of, because they taught me that when things got rough, I could run to God and not away from him. So I ran to God. But it was definitely this theology of glory. And there was this expectation of, well, now you've got it, Brian. So, you know, this is great. Now you got to keep going. Like, what do you got to do next? How can you keep getting better and better and better? And so then when I was in college and I found myself in a second pregnancy scare, it was an identity fallout. It was an identity crisis for me, because I thought I was getting better and I thought I was beyond this. And I realized I was just as bad as I was in high school. You know, Ethan said earlier, you know, 10 years back, you look at yourself and you're like, what a dummy. It was that moment where I said, oh, I'm still the dummy. Mm. And so in that moment, I happened to be going to a church that the lead pastor was one of the early bloggers for Mockingbird. And he was able to articulate this gracious message about the law being more than just an ethical system, that it actually should point me to Jesus and his death and resurrection, his forgiveness. And that was something you don't graduate from. It's something you keep going back to day in and day out. And he really saved my soul. Like it realigned my understanding of Christianity in a way that it didn't depend on me to sort of keep it all going. Instead, it was all about God's faithfulness in the midst of it. And I think if you talk to different people here at Mockingbird about, and you know, perhaps after dinner, after they've had a couple of more, you know, IPAs, a couple more glasses of wine, many of us have stories like that where we all have had these bottoming out experiences. Folks have had eating disorders, folks who've been failed at church plants, folks who've been kicked out of churches, folks who would never have stepped foot in a church. Mockingbird is a community of folks who've been in touch with that place and been able to say, okay, well, the gospel actually provides me something in the middle of that.
So. I think also, too, the community has supported one another in our ministries from wherever we are. I think it's functioned in that way, and it's also excited us and given us new ideas of ways to do ministry, reinvigorated our creativity, and living into the reality that we're made by an amazing creator, and we can use that creativity to connect with people, this message, and it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be so specific, and it doesn't have to be locked in a box. And so, I think it's given people freedom not to run out and misbehave or whatever, but it's given people gospel freedom to share the good news without shame and without fear and trepidation, and to say, like, that we truly, I think, the community are receivers of this gift, and they're really excited about it. And so if you want to be part of this community, we're happy to have you guys too.
So. The bar is really, really low. Like, I'm not sure there is a bar. That's why this conference, people come back to it so often. It's because it provides sort of a safe space where you can kind of let your guard down a little bit, you know? It's a running gag. That's why there's the candy cigarettes. Like, I don't know what it is about Mockingbird, but like people who are, who enjoy a good smoke, they know more about the bondage of the will than a lot of people. So, you know, you can have some of the best theological conversations you'll ever have are basically over some tobacco out in the courtyard.
That's right.
Or, one of the things that makes Mockingbird unique is we have non-Christian speakers. We started this about 3 years ago, and we wanted to get some experts on reality to help us understand the gospel better. And so this year we've got Aaron Kleinberg, and he's going to be our expert, so to speak, on issues of modern romance. He helped Aziz Ansari write his book about modern romance, which then got turned into the Netflix series Master of None. And so when you talk about someone who's had a real impact on people's understanding, or who has a real pulse on people's understanding of romance in the 21st century. And I can't wait. Like, I'm very excited to hear him speak. And then that's going to help me back when I go home to do ministry, because I'll have a better understanding of that world. And so make friends while you're here. Everyone pretty much is at least in touch enough with their own brokenness and inability that they're not going to be weirded out if you just go up and shake hands. So.